Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Friday, December 19th, 2016. Good afternoon, Al.
Oh, Melody.
Oh, it's going to be a heavy sigh today, as I really was counting on seeing a bottom here for gold. So I didn't say much in the past couple of days. But it's beginning to recover, though, from the earlier drops that we saw in the gold price today. Well, sort of, kind of, a little bit. $1,159 for gold, down $1,210 in the New York aftermarket spot price. Silver down 18 cents, back below 17 at $1,692. Platinum took a beating today, down 23 at 2.5%, the worst of the metals, and palladium was down 4 at $737. The USDX today, I haven't followed it today, must have done gangbusters, sort of, 0.49 to the upside at 101.60. So 2 days in a row, we had some big moves. Crude oil was up another 63 at 51.47. And I'll tell you what, folks, be prepared, because gold will catch up. Gold will catch up with these numbers. It's not going to be the only item that's negative. But you have a lot of these ETFs. You had some huge pullouts out of these ETFs. And but you can't have higher crude oil prices. And everyone talking about all the spending, all the inflation that's going to be coming into the market, and not have gold respond. It's just, this is all nonsense at this point in time. There is no proof of anything. The only proof that we really have, or anything that we can kind of hang our hats on, is next week Janet Yellen is going to probably increase the rate a quarter point, an interest rate a quarter point. And what we went over yesterday for the three historic times when interest rates were increased, it was the second rate increase where gold really took off. And I will probably have those numbers if I can get them together for the newsletter. They'll be in the newsletter this week. So, again, it's a lot of good news for gold. It's hard to say that because of the pressure that we've seen in gold. But all eyes are on the Dow. All eyes are on the paper markets. Everyone is, you know, it's just a matter of time until it hits 20,000. Let's get it done. Let's get it over with. They can celebrate on Wall Street. They can wear all their little paper hats and their little T-shirts, Dow to 20,000. Just like they did with Dow 10,000, and then immediately thereafter, it cratered.
Irrational. Got something to do with the hats and the horns, Melody.
I guess irrational exuberance is exactly what we're experiencing. Not a thing has been done. Not a penny has been spent. This is a feel-good market, and that's what's so amazing about it. It's a feel-good. It's a confidence. It's a confidence market, and that's all it is. And I saw you have one article. We'll talk about how the preppers are no longer prepping, because I guess they believe, you know, hey, there's nothing, there isn't anything more to prep for, which is really kind of silly. But yet there really is. There's a lot. And even though they might, perhaps they're not buying as much food as they have, or, you know, perhaps they haven't purchased as many batteries and many solar lights and so forth and water filters, there's still a lot to prepare for. And there's still a lot that is coming our way. But let me go ahead and finish out the paper markets here. As soon as I bring this up, you are looking at the Dow was up over 100 points, three digits today, at 142, at 19,756. The NASDAQ was up 27 at 5,444. The S&P was up 13, 2,259. The 10-year yield today, holy smokes, 2.46 on the 10-year yield, up 0.08. That's an That's a big move on that 10-year yield, 2.46%, up 0.08. What I had wanted to say is there's not so many preppers out there, but I'll tell you what, I've had more calls this week with people sharing with me their concerns, and they're out of there. They said, I don't care if it hits 20,000 or 25,000. This market is not normal. It is not right, and they're scared. They're scared of the way this market has increased. They're pulling out. They told me, they shared with me, they're pulling out all their funds out of the paper markets because this just isn't normal. There is just, I mean, it really is bizarre. Seeing this and having it last as long as it has after the initial, after the election. So,
Michael Snyder wrote this article that you referenced about the prepping community. It was, it is like a nuclear bomb went off in the prepping community. That's the headline. He said, is the prepper movement in the United States dying? At one point, it was estimated that there were 3 million preppers, and for those of you who don't know, I imagine you all do, but for you, the preppers are people who are preparing for some sort of a calamity in our economic political system. They're anticipating there's going to be a moment when we're not going to be able to get electricity, not going to be able to get power, not going to be able to get gasoline, not going to be able to get food, and they're trying to store up whatever they think they're going to need for these difficult times. Well, after, he says, in late 2016, interest in prepping has hit a multi-year low. The big reason for this, of course, is the election of Donald Trump that's fueled a tremendous wave of optimism among those who consider themselves to be conservatives, patriots, and evangelical Christians. Not since the election of Ronald Reagan has the mood on the right shifted into in such a positive direction so suddenly. Now that everyone is feeling good about things, very few people seem to be interested in preparing for the hard times ahead. As publisher of the Economic Collapse blog, Michael Snyder is in contact with a lot of people that serve the preparation community, and he says that the sales of emergency food and supplies have been crashing since Donald Trump's surprise election victory. Firms that help people relocate outside the United States have seen their business really dry up. He refers to one high-profile individual that actually decided to move back to the United States after Trump's victory. Snyder says he's quite alarmed that so many people are suddenly letting their guard down. They're succumbing to this wave of optimism, but it's difficult to convince people to be vigilant when things seem to be going so well. So, well, what he's talking about is the fundamentals are still here. What's changed? Guy going into Washington, he'll be there in a couple in basically a month before he even takes office. And yet, we're having a parade. You know?
Well, I think a lot of this prepping that's been going on has been fueled a lot by, it's been a fad for many, fueled by a lot of these TV programs, reality programs, and so forth. And for people who move out of the country and so forth with this idea that things are better elsewhere and so forth, sometimes, and they move back so quickly just because of an election, I don't think, and I don't know who this person is and so forth, but it's just my guess and my opinion, I don't think they truly understand, or do they really have a strong belief in what they were doing in the first place? Maybe it was, something exciting, something new. They heard somebody was moving and they decided to move and so forth. But I don't think, if you're so quick to leave just because an election that was held just a month ago, and that changes your view of the whole world and the idea of what moves the world, what makes the world go round, I don't know how strong of a belief that you have in the system.
My guess is that
you're easily moved and convinced that other things can happen and, you know, you just don't have a real strong...
My guess is that the guy who made the decision to come back to the United States was already disenchanted about wherever he was that he'd moved to. And I think part of the reason for this is We've watched too many movies where you go to a foreign country. You know, they were made in the 40s and the 50s and the 60s. You go to a foreign country and everybody loves Americans. You move into a foreign country and you may not be the most popular kid on your block. There's a certain amount of, hey, you know, and you're not as welcome as maybe as people may hope. And even if you were, or you didn't expect to be welcome, there is a problem of adjusting to a foreign culture. It's not easily done. You think you're going to just walk in there and give them a big smile and everybody's going to, hey, gringo, come on over, sit down.
It's not a vacation.
No, it's not that. It's not that. It's something different. And there is a sense of isolation.
But I think, too, this is also a good sign because it shakes out the weak believers. There's been a lot of misinformation, a lot of distortions of even in the gold market, in any area that I see articles written about things, getting people all lathered up about, you know, the end of the world because, you know, I mean, all these deadlines that things were happening. You know what? All of those people that predicted all the things, many of them will be gone. You won't ever hear from them again. They'll come back when the opportunity arises again. And I've seen this happen time and time again over the years. And that's why when these predictions and so forth are going on, I don't heed, I don't pay a lot of attention to them because I know what our system is made of. And I understand that. And an election is not going to cure our problems. But a lot of these new people that take advantage. They make a lot of money selling fear. They make, they sell their newsletters and everything else. And then when the times get tough, they're history. They're gone. And I think we're possibly could experiencing some of that right now. Now, I'm a little surprised that just because of the election, that it's making them weak in the knees and so forth. They're leaving so quickly, but so it can be a good thing. And again, you hear a lot of stories about fake news, and it's difficult to weed through a lot of the truth, a lot of the information that's being floated around. So so in that sense, you know, it's a good thing. The key thing you have to remember is truly what is. And we talk about it here every day. We're not going to change. We're going to bring you the news. We're going to bring you how it's going to affect our purchasing, how things are going to be, and whether it's good news. I said yesterday on the program, I said, hey, I'm hoping Donald Trump can bring things around. I'm hoping he is going to be the success that I know he believes he will be. And but in the meantime, with that said, in order to be successful in turning this country around, the one thing they haven't addressed is our debt. I have not heard anything about how our monetary system is going to be addressed. The two go hand in hand. And I suppose they can create, I guess, another bubble. A different type of a bubble that we've experienced in the past. But again, none of the true problems to really make this country great again, we have to deal with our debt, not just our new debt, but our old debt, and we have to address our monetary policy. That's how I see it. And as long as we're on a fiat currency, until that is addressed, the one thing I know, and it might seem very simple to look at it this way, but it keeps me focused and on path. As long as we have a fiat currency, we're going to have inflation. Government's going to continue to grow. Government's going to continue to spend, and gold prices are going to go higher. Let me rephrase that. It's not just gold prices are going higher. Gold will preserve my purchasing price regardless of the price. Let me change that because I said the wrong thing. Gold will preserve my purchasing power regardless of the price.
An article here from the Washington Examiner, based on an article, a study that was titled No Recovery, an analysis of long-term U.S. productivity decline. New report on the economy says that productivity growth is at a 50-year low. That's not cause for breaking out the party hats and the horns and the rest of this sort of thing. And then much of the positive talk about the nation's financial situation in the last election, much of it coming from the administration, was a lie. The report comes from the U.S. Council on Competitiveness and Gallup and finds that for many, the economy is in reverse, despite claims that there is an active recovery ongoing, complete with new jobs. The report makes clear that the Obama administration propaganda and media claims that a recovery is underway were carefully coordinated lies. Quite simply, there is no recovery and things are getting worse all the time. And America's swelling numbers of working poor. And a lot of people sit back and don't have much sympathy for the poor. Too bad for them. But, you know, we see some very reports like this are evidence that many of us may be joining the working poor, right? No matter holding your nose up at these people, you may be among them before this is all over. The people are right. The economy is not working well. But the problem didn't start with the Great Recession. For decades, the nation's income, measured as GDP, has barely grown overall. On a per capita basis, median household income peaked in 1999, that's 17 years ago. The subjective growth, the subjective general health status of Americans has declined, even adjusting for the aging population. Disability rates are higher, learning has stagnated, fewer new businesses are being launched, and more workers are involuntarily stuck in part-time jobs or out of the labor force entirely. These trends have been published, punishing the middle class. Ideology, stubbornness, and disregard for the lives of Americans who have to live with that ideology and stubbornness have allowed the Obama team to look the other way and make pretend that their failed policies are shining up the nation. Back in reality, things are crumbling. Federal Reserve monetary policy made changes that will be hard to undo. While we were snoozing, the bankers took charge, and they sold you a lie to keep you passive and submissive. The point this article is making, look, they're having a celebration because Trump got elected, but maybe there's not cause for such a celebration, and maybe not cause for celebration at all. We'll take a break, a couple of commercials, be back in a moment on financial survival. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk CommonSenseTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
Well, prior to the break, we were talking about the economy, whether we were really in a recovery or not. But even for those who think that we are, there was an updated study by Harvard and Princeton. Their economist shows that a staggering 94% of net job growth from 2005 to 2015 was in alternate work, and that's temporary or unsteady work, and like independent contracting, temporary agencies, I mean Uber, that would be one driving, that type of thing. And that really is 94% of jobs created from 2005 to 2015 was in the alternative work. And they point out that the majority of these temporary employees are on-call workers, freelancers, workers hired out through contract firms. And as companies have added back jobs that were cut, they want to have the more flexibility. And this is what this study showed. So again, just, you know, here you have Harvard, here you have Princeton economists who are saying, hey, you know, things just aren't all that good. We might have a higher employment. You know, they talk about full employment. Pardon?
They claim to have higher employment.
They claim to have, exactly. But even those that were created, of course, were not quality programs. You also have restaurant traffic. Traffic at U.S. fast food restaurants fell 1% in the third quarter, to mark the sector's first traffic decline in 5 years. And some of the factors that weighed in was ranging from higher costs of eating out, changing consumer behavior, which is part of, you know, disposable income, higher bills for items such as rent, prescriptions. The term growing your business in a 1% world has become a popular mantra for the restaurant industry after six consecutive years of annual traffic gains. But over the past 6 months, there's certainly changing very quickly. And eating out has become more expensive. And usually the food is not all that great either. The food costs are low. It's just that they certainly charge a high price for eating out. So you also have, there's a generic drug maker, Mylan. If everyone remembers, they were the ones that were under fire for the huge price hikes on the life-saving EpiPen for allergy treatments. They said that it expected to cut less than 10% of its workforce as they're restructuring. So they're looking, this was in yesterday, I believe I had this. They were looking at 3,500 layoffs coming soon. There was another couple of, another layoff, SunPower. They announced on Wednesday that they were going to cut 2,500 jobs on top of previous cuts. This is a California-based company. And so this is the 2,500 employees represents about 25% of its workforce. And they're also going to shutter a 700-megawatt factory in the Philippines. And so their previous announcement to lay off was 1,200 workers, or about 15% of its workforce. So again, big job cuts there. So again, these are just little signs that show us that, or tells us and confirms and supports that perhaps, you know, this economy that we're being constantly told is so great is not so much. And you have Donald Trump, you know, you hear that he's inheriting an economy at what, 2.5% GDP? Give or take a little bit?
Growth rate.
Pardon?
The annual growth rate at 2.5% on the GDP.
Of the GDP. So
I doubt that it's that much, but yeah.
That's my point. So if reality comes after he's elected, he's really not embracing a 2.5% economy. It's probably more likely 1%, maybe 1.5%. So,
well, you know, when the Soviet Union collapsed back about 1990, one of the statistics that stuck in my mind over the course of the next several years is that the average life expectancy for the average man living in the Soviet Union dropped by something like 10 years. It went from something like 65 down to 56, if I recall correctly. Now, I don't know that it dropped 9 years necessarily or 10 years, whatever. I don't, again, the number it's just going through my mind, but I remember it with significant clarity given that it's, 15, 20 years ago. At least when I heard the statistic. And the reason I mention that is because here's an article. Life expectancy in the United States drops for the first time in decades. In the Soviet Union, when it collapsed, the people's life expectancies also collapsed. There was a correlation. People started dying earlier. Here we have life expectancy in the United States drops for the first time in decades. One of the fundamental ways scientists measure the well-being of a nation is tracking the rate at which its citizens die and how long they can be expected to live. So the news out of the federal government Thursday is disturbing. The overall U.S. death rate has increased for the first time in a decade. This is according to the analysis of most recent data, and that led to a drop in overall life expectancy for the first time since 1993, particularly among people younger than 65. Philip Morgan, a demographer at the University of North Carolina, said this is not a better indicator. He said there's not a better indicator of well-being than life expectancy. The fact that it's leveling off in the United States is a striking finding. Well, it's particularly interesting. We've had Obamacare, the signature legislation of President Barack Obama's administration, happening basically at the same time life expectancies are shortening. Obamacare has not reversed this trend. We are allegedly in an economic recovery, but as we pointed out in an earlier article or just a few minutes ago, the recovery is a lie. And we don't know how long, if this life expectancy data is a blip, an anomaly. We don't know if this is a long-term trend. But it's certainly one of the best indicators you can find that the economy is not doing well. It's a weekend debate about how many people are buying new cars, new homes, unemployment up, down. Are the numbers falsified? Are they manipulated? We can have a debate on that. A lot of it's subjective. A lot of it's based on our different opinion and the rest of it. But when life expectancy begins to drop, that's pretty good evidence that we got trouble here in River City. With a capital T, and that stands, and that rhymes with P. And I'm not sure what it's in the movie that rhymes with pool. I don't know that that'll help us at all. But still, this is evidence that the fundamentals are being under stress, and that some sort of a serious repercussion is headed our way.
I think, too, when you have society and you have wealth, I mean, we're seeing the changes in China. Well, their eating habits change. They end up eating more meat. They end up eating more, fatty foods. They end up becoming a little more plump. The wealthier you become, your society changes as far as the habits and so forth. And I think, too, I've also heard recently that a lot of these younger death-related incidences is due to higher drug usage, higher suicides.
So well, it again, may be, but suicides, I would here in the United States, if you're doing more drugs and you're stumbling into these suicides, it's not because you're making $200,000 a year. Typically,
that's
it's
my
because
point.
You're barely hanging on.
But that's my point. These are, you know, more signs of a society declining than one that is, you know, in control. It's a signs of out of control, and have we reached our peak? Can we recapture a peak to the, you know, to glory days?
If we can get rid of the excess baggage, if we can eliminate the fraud and the exploitation that's been taking place in this country, if we can get a government that actually cares about the ordinary people rather than just the elite who give money to Congress and Senate and presidents to pass bills that help to enrich the elite. If we can do that, then we can make a recovery. And we will. Right? Soviet Union, the life expectancy was regained ultimately in Russia. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a permanent thing. But you have to get rid of you have to eliminate your bad habits. And they could be drugs, they could be, you know, alcohol, they could be just not having jobs. But if you can get rid of your bad habits, you can make a recovery. If you can't, hope you're in good standing with the good Lord, because you may be seeing him sooner rather than later. What's next, Melody?
Plus, too, when you look at the life expectancy in the U.S., you also have to ask the question, you know, how does the baby boomers, you know, fall into that? Have we had a lot of baby boomers that are, you know, a larger part of the population? You know, so there could be a lot of reasons, but, you know, do we have a larger part of the population that has aged now that is more dying, which would skew that type of a report? But but again, it doesn't, you know, I mean, look at Japan. I mean, look at their aging population and so forth. It doesn't fare for the younger generations when you have these, you know, these huge, you know, you had the big baby boomer population growth and then very little population growth after that. So it doesn't fare well for future economies.
Well, it's one of those things, sooner or later, people are going to start having kids again, but you're hopeful that we will have them in the context of a strong economy rather than.
And then they'll be fighting the robots for jobs.
Well, what can I tell you? You got to fight the robots. You got to fight the illegal aliens. God knows. I mean, it's a world where you just fight, fight, fight. Here's an article that is interesting and important. This is from Zero Hedge. Documents prove massive rigging in silver market. FAR suppresses the conspiracy alleged earlier. Almost everyone understands that the prices of hard assets are suppressed and that the real value price would skyrocket under a true free market. But now traders have been caught in the act conspiring to suppress the price of silver in the markets. And this article is about silver, but you can bet it's also about gold. The details are not about gold, but the same thing applies. It is fraudulent and nothing, but nothing too evil for banks to engage in. They're talking about this market manipulation. If this made the mainstream news, it would look like an unprecedented crime, and evidence that all of Wall Street should be regulated more closely. Since it isn't making the news, the banks are just quietly settling. In other words, I mean, they've been charged, but they're just like, we'll give you some money. And you take your little FBI agents and whatever and go away and stop bothering us. Most of the banks are, some of the banks at least, are quietly settling. It is further indication that the entire industry sector is on the gold and silver price manipulation. It's a house of cards that could bring them all down. Back in April, when Zero Hedge first reported that Deutsche Bank had agreed to settle allegations that it had rigged the silver market in exchange for a $38 million fine, it turns out there was another report that was equally stunning. In a curious twist, the settlement letter revealed that former members of the manipulation cartel have turned on each other. The Deutsche Bank would provide documents implicating other precious metal riggers, to wit,
In addition to valuable monetary consideration, Deutsche Bank has also agreed to provide cooperation to plaintiffs, that would be the government and whoever that are trying to sue for market manipulation. Deutsche Bank has agreed to provide cooperation to plaintiffs, including the production of instant messages and other electronic communications as part of the settlement. All right. Just in the last few days, we've had a glimpse into what the production of these documents contained in a lawsuit in New York. According to documents filed by the plaintiff in a class action lawsuit, what Deutsche Bank provided as part of its settlement was nothing short of smoking gun proof that UBS Group, HSBC Holdings, Bank of Nova Scotia, and other firms rigged the silver market. In the document, records surrendered by Deutsche Bank traders and submitters were captured coordinating trades in advance of a daily phone call, manipulating the spot market for silver, conspiring to fix the spread on silver offered to customers, and using illegal strategies to rig the price. Now, the latest evidence is critical because, as the plaintiffs add, the new scheme far suppresses conspiracy alleged earlier. They've got so much new evidence, thanks to Deutsche Bank, that they're asking to they want to change their lawsuit. They want to increase the complaint, demand more reparations. They see evidence of ongoing market rigging, meaning it's still taking place. And they talk about the traders. They have a couple of traders that are conspiring. They have records of it. The traders shared customer order flow information, improperly triggered customer stop-loss orders, and engaged in practices such as spoofing, all meant to destabilize the price of silver ahead of the fix and result in forced buying and selling. It also led to what on many occasions to the infamous metals slam, led to this slam. This is words in quote. The word they use is slam, which means out of nowhere, billions of notional contracts emerge, usually with the intent to sell to halt any upside movement in the precious metals. What they're telling us, first off, they have a word spoofing that they use for one of the strategies. That means it's a spoofing. They know this strategy in the market industry. They have the slam. It's another word that is known in the marketing industry. All right? And this is not the evidence when they have specific words to identify their strategies. It's evidence that this is not something that a couple of guys just concocted up on the side and they say, hey, why don't we try this? It's evidence that this is an ongoing phenomena across many of our markets. The point behind all of this is that the market manipulation may be coming to an end, or at least being slowed, maybe ended. If it does, prices for gold, prices of silver could go up dramatically. I'm Alfred Attisker with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. Be back in a moment. Please stay tuned. I need to hear it just one more time.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on financial survival. What's next, Melody?
Well, I had something I wanted to share with the listeners. It also involved down where you're at, down there in Texas, and it involves the pensions. And I believe yesterday, and I'm going from the, as they say, seat of your pants, because I can't find the...
For Dallas police officers and firemen's pensions.
Yes, where they actually stopped folks from being able to... I guess they stopped issuing checks to their pensions.
They prevent them from cleaning out their accounts, apparently. The pension accounts were subject... You would withdraw everything if you wanted to at any moment. And some people were doing that because they see that regulation is going to tighten up on this. So they're getting in, get theirs now. And they've passed laws that have regulations, determinations. I don't know whether they're laws or not. But in any case, you can't just pull your money out of the pension fund all at once.
Well, no, I believe they actually stopped the checks. I'm trying to find this here as we speak. They suspended all withdrawals and payments, not just trying to slow them down, coming out of the deferred retirement payments. This was a vote yesterday that stopped more than $154 million in requested withdrawals from being distributed today. Pensions official says that the withdrawals could drop reserves below what was needed to sustain the fund. More than $500 million has been withdrawn since August. When we talked about this on the program, we thought, well, because they were concerned about that it was certainly an underfunded pension by billions of dollars, and with that in mind, the first thing I'd want to do is pull out my money, and I was surprised that they didn't have anything at that time to sort of allocate these withdrawals. So now they put a complete suspension on all withdrawals and payments coming out of there. Dallas Mayor Mike Rawlings filed a lawsuit to stop the lump sum withdrawals, which he said has sped up the estimated insolvency projection for the ailing fund to about 10 years. Well, I guarantee it's a lot less than 10 years.
Yeah, I know. If they're doing anything about it, it's more likely to be 10 months than it is 10 years.
System officials says they're working to convert the illiquid assets to liquid and to resume monthly payments in January. So if they're resuming monthly payments, then that means nobody's getting a pension fund. Nobody's getting a check. Kind of a terrible time of the
year. Well, it's a difficult time, but I've got an article here, Don, that deals with the subject from a couple of days ago. And much to my surprise, they set up particular benefits for the Dallas firefighter and police retirees. And by the time it was done, if you worked the game properly, you could retire as a millionaire. Currently, there are 517 accounts and bank accounts right now that are involved in this retirement system where individuals that have in excess of $1 million. Mm-hmm. They have set up a pension fund where you could retire as a millionaire. And the truth of the matter is, you can't do that with an ordinary job. I mean, I can understand people in Wall Street or whatever, maybe they get a pension fund that can produce millions of dollars. I get that. But they're dealing with millions of dollars. Right now, we've got police and firemen. There's no legitimate way that they can come up with $1 million pension from being a police officer or a fireman. They can do it. The law has been passed. Laws have been passed that allow it to take place. But it's a hustle. It's a con. Somebody's got to pay for their retirement besides themselves. They're not taking $1 million out of their own bank account. They're not taking $1 million from their own earnings to provide this $1 million pension. They are using systems that rely on taxpayers to subsidize their retirement. And as a result, some people at least were able to retire in excess with an excess of $1 million. It can't work. It just can't work. The pension plan guaranteed 8% returns. Guaranteed. Right? People, put your money in this fund over here. We guarantee you're going to make 8%. 8%? That's a deal. Guaranteed. Plus, they got a 4% annual inflation benefit. That's 12% a year on whatever they put into the retirement fund. Plus, they could cut a deal where they took their money, their checks, while they were still in the police department, still in the fire department, they could act as if they were retired and make deposits into this special fund, and the deposits would add up over time where they wound up with $1 million. The whole thing was a bunch of legalistic nonsense, right? And at the time, probably said, oh, it's okay, it won't, who's, you know, if it's, it'll be a problem maybe for the taxpayers in 2016, but that's years from now. We don't have to worry about that. Well, here we are, you know. But in any case, it's one of the things that's interesting about this, and you see some evidence of it also in Chicago. You've got a situation where the pension funds that are going to police and fire department people may wind up destroying the cities. At the moment, the police and fire department pension funds may pose more of a threat to major cities in the United States than the crack dealers and the, you know, the gangsters. The people who were supposed to protect and defend the cities were actually they participated in devising pension funds that may actually help to destroy the city. So we'll watch how this unfolds, but it is an extraordinary irony. People who were intended to protect the city may be instrumental in destroying some of them. No. Pensions can't be paid. And if you try, matter of fact, the mayor of Dallas, he was hoping to get, he was trying to cut a deal where the police officers and the fire department would agree to take cuts in their pensions. I'm trying to cut a deal, Melody, where they authorize me to fly around like Peter Pan. I'm hopeful that's going to go through, but I don't think my chances of flying like Peter Pan are much better than the Dallas mayor's possibility of getting police and fire officers to agree to take smaller pensions than they have finagled.
To the moon, Alice.
Yeah, I understand.
To the moon. Oh, I know. I mean, it's just, but here people are not getting their checks. And, you know, if they're going to resume monthly payments in January, you wonder at, you know, how much of a reduction, maybe not in January, but a reduction is coming. And, you know, then to try and, you know, keep these people, you know, just continue with promises that, you know.
That can't be
kept.
And
this isn't just Dallas, folks. I mean, when you think of Texas and you think of Dallas and you think of the wealth and you think, well, and you think of the way Texans think, and you think of them more as a republic. You think of them as more of, you know, that they wouldn't do this. You know, this is, you know, you would think that a state like Texas would be kind of a little bit of exempt. You know, not 100%, but somewhat exempt from, you know, the some of the corruption and so forth you see like in New York City and so forth. No, it's everywhere, folks. You know, it's just everywhere. And, you know, they promised things and they made these contracts and, you know, but people shouldn't have believed that this was, you know, they shouldn't have believed that it was, if it was too good
to be
true.
Well, it was extortion is what it really was. We had people in government unions, and they were in a position that if you didn't give them what they wanted, they would threaten to withhold police services or fire department services, and people are going to, you know, buildings are going to burn, people are going to die, who knows what's going to happen here. The agreements were extorted, but they didn't mind because they wouldn't be paid for another 20 years or whatever.
How you want. It was something that was too good to be true.
I agree.
Always, you know,
and what's going to happen
circumstances
now?
That, you know, wouldn't be acceptable to most.
Pardon? What's going to happen? And the answer is that the police and the fire departments who negotiated these fabulous pension agreements are going to find out that they don't get anything.
That's
an exaggeration. They'll get something, but they're not going to get what they instead of negotiating a deal that was fair, they cut a deal that was so one-sided that it had to fail. And now they're going to be caught precisely because it was one-sided. It'll be part of the reason why they wind up taking a serious loss. And they're going to be hurt. And what do you say? I don't know. There's a certain amount of justice in that. You know, you get so greedy, you think you can rob candy from a baby, all right, take all that candy. Then you eat it and you get diabetes. And you say, oh, this is so unfair. I stole that candy fair and square, and now I eat it and it gives me diabetes. There's a point here where people are obligated, if they're sensible, to try to be fair rather than just take advantage of opportunities. And that's a lesson we can all agree on, and not many of us can follow it. I mean, all the rest of you should be fair, but if I see an opportunity, maybe I can just pounce on it. It's the way we kind of think. But we're going to learn some painful lessons here. And one of them is going to be, I've been talking now since I think 2010, first time I started talking, what can't be paid won't be paid.
And as good as and as exciting as we can be on our future and changing things to the positive, these bad things aren't going away. I mean, we still have these situations that we're going to have to live through, adjust to, and they're not going to be pleasant for many, many people. So again, folks, you know, just see through all the hoopla and place yourself in a position. Make sure you are protected. And if you want to be in paper and take advantage of, if you think the Dow is going to go to 25,000, be my guest. But get it insured properly. And owning 10% or 20% of gold is not going to do it for you. So again, just make sure you're positioned properly so your gold and silver will protect you from what we see as a 70-80% drop in your paper investments. Here's an article we were talking earlier about robots taking over. I'm not sure, this is out of the UK. Corporate giant Capita replaces staff with automations. It's an outsourcing giant, Capita. I'm not quite sure what they do. They're listed in the FTSE 100. They collect it provides services, but anyway, they're going to sack 2,000 employees and replace them with robots. And this article talks about the fear that this could be repeated across their economy, leading up to more than 1 million job losses. It said it was used the saved money it saved to fund investment into robotic workers. So, you know, the money that they save from firing people is only going to go back into more investments to see how more robots or robotic workers could help the company even more. So the investments are going back into. So they talk about more than 850,000 public sector jobs. You wouldn't think teachers. Well, I don't know about teachers. Look at computers now. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, people get their degrees on the computer anymore. Mm-hmm. They don't need a professor. Social workers, police officers, they talked about could be replaced by computer programs. So, and again, I think we talked about this once. What happens to these governments? How are they going to provide for the people? You know, how are people going to have access to food and everything else? And it would be that you would receive your monthly government check. So
the other point is this: if robots are going to replace the people,
What is it they're going to produce that anybody's going to be able to buy? You know, I'm going to get a robot. We're going to get a robot, and we're going to make meals. Okay, but we're not going to hire any employees. Well, pretty soon, how does anyone have any money to buy food? What is the point of getting a robot if you can't get money to the people where they can buy the product that's being made?
The government provides the check to everyone.
Well, that's a good theory, but we'll watch to see. And maybe it'll work out that way. I don't know, but we are certainly on, you know, interesting times.
I mean, this is a little risque for me, but I mean, if you think about it, you're seeing more and more articles about robots and sex. You're not going to have any ladies of the evening anymore. They're going to lose their jobs.
Oh, my gosh.
They're going to lose their jobs. I mean,
you mean when we go down to the $1 million saloon, there's going to be a robot strutting around that brass pole?
You won't have to go down to the saloon. You'll be able to get it in 3D or virtual reality.
Holograph or whatever else.
And have your friendly...
The times there are changing, Melody. You know, should have Bob Dylan here to sing that song.
You know what's funny? I can remember talking about these things back in the 70s, 80s. Again, here we are talking about the same thing, and so it takes a while, you think, but we might just be on the cusp.
It's moving fast now.
We might just be on the cusp of it. This isn't the 70s and 80s anymore.
No, things were slow moving back then.
Yeah.
They were fixing to replace 2,000 workers with robots. I don't know. You know, I mean, and by when? We're not talking about 2,000 workers being replaced by robots 10 years from now.
No, not at all.
No, this is bang, bang, bang. You're going to be buying robots down at Walmart before this is all over. Get a new robot. Need help? You could either get yourself an illegal alien, you could, I don't know, or get yourself a robot. What do you want? We're out of time for the day, for the week. Thanks for listening. Melody and I will be back on Monday. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, or Todd, the producer. Bye-bye.
Work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my dreams.